A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome back to the Mother-Daughter Manual. I'm Liv.
I'm Fliss.
What are you eating?
I'm hungry, Libs. I'm hungry.
Oh my God, you sound like that fat Dalmatian from 101 Dalmatians.
Excuse me, there were 100 Dalmatians in that movie, and you choose the fat one.
Yeah, but it's more about the fact that it's what you said. You said, I'm hungry, and that little Dalmatian says, I'm hungry, Mother, I really am.
Yeah, I know, but that was the fat one.
I know it's the fat one, but... Oh, there's a moment when they're watching that dog treat commercial, and then there's this guy with a moustache, and he's like, the champion of all dog food. And then they all come on, like, dancing, like, canine crunchies can't be beat.
I give up. Oh, God. Right.
So...
Yeah.
It's quote time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So it's your go this week, because you stole mine.
Yeah.
So, quote.
Sorry. How do mothers and daughters cope on the long journey of life?
What? You're not even reading that. What's... Did you just make that up?
No.
You did, didn't you?
Well, no, what happened, Libby, is that I lost it because it was in the pocket of my trousers and you put the trousers into the washing machine and, hey presto, lots and lots of bits of paper that...
Yeah, that's... We both know that's a lie.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, why are you lying?
I don't know, Liv.
You just can't be bothered to do this quote. I might scrap the whole quote section, you know?
I couldn't be bothered, Libby.
Yeah, I bet you couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
God. Well, at least you lied rather than just saying it was another bad week.
Well, it was a demanding week, Liv.
Okay, well, luckily for you, I do have a quote in the back burner.
Oh, well done, darling.
Thanks. So much, Mum. Thanks.
Yeah.
Do you want me to read it to you?
Yes, please, yeah.
Okay, so the quote this week is... The more a daughter knows the details of her mother's life without flinching or whining, the stronger the daughter. So that is by Anita Diamond.
Well, that's okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look, I just want to say, who's doing the flinching and who's doing the whining? Is it the mother or the daughter or the daughter or the mother?
Okay, hang on, let's have a look. The more a daughter knows the details of her mother's life without flinching or whining. Okay, so it's about the daughter doing the without her flinching or whining, isn't it?
What, the daughter flinching or whining?
Yeah,
because... not very nice about your daughter, though, is it? To say your daughter, flinches and whines if she knows something about your life.
I think you always think I flinch and whine.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, yeah. So which daughter are you supporting?
Okay, all right. Well, very interesting.
When I hear details of your life... I don't really flinch and whine,
no,
to be fair.
No, you don't. You're really
apparently,
serious.
According to this quote, it means that the stronger I am.
Yeah.
But I have to say, with this quote... Sorry, I'm really taking over here, aren't I? Because you've had your bad week.
Go on.
I do think that, you know, some girls might not have had their mothers around in their lives. That doesn't mean they're not strong.
I agree with that.
Yeah, so... I mean, obviously, we know that these comments aren't Bible.
Yeah, I just think it's a very strange concept to think that because you know more intimate details about your mother, you feel stronger as a result. So let's say if your mother's had a terrible time, you find those details out and it makes you feel stronger. No, I think it makes you more empathetic with your mother if you find out things about your mother, or if you find out horrible things about your mother, perhaps you're less empathetic towards that person. I don't see how it makes you stronger.
Thank you, teacher. No, but I think it's a good point because maybe knowing stuff that your mother's gone through, do you learn from things?
You can learn, can't you?
You can learn from mistakes, you can learn from actually achievements, you can learn from anything.
Yeah, you can be inspired by a mother, can't you?
I thought you were just about to say you could be a spy, and I thought, yeah, I'd love to be a spy.
Yeah, you could be a spy.
I really thought that was what you were going to say.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, such a shame.
I was saying you could be inspired by your mother.
And that, yeah.
Couldn't you, Liz?
I absolutely could.
Good.
I could also, I preferred the spy route.
I know you did.
Yeah.
I know you did.
I would actually love, that is one of the dreams.
I'm not crazy about this quote. I think it's a clever quote to have chosen. It'll certainly... There'll be some nice debate from this, I think.
Absolutely. I also think the whole flinching and whining thing, that's very teenagery, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you do go through your life as a teenager sort of whining about hearing about your mum or...
Well, you don't. I mean, it depends on how mature you are. But I know that when I was a teenager, I was absolutely hopeless. I mean, I was sort of like just thinking, how can I get out of their vision so I can do something naughty? That's all I was thinking. It was my raison d'etre.
What do you always
do? You were
something?
Quite naughty as well.
I was actually. I don't think I was.
Well, you were quite naughty. Yeah.
In what way?
But not bad. You weren't bad naughty.
Wasn't bad.
You were just mischievous naughty.
Yeah,
which is different.
A bit moody.
Yeah, but every teenager's moody, you know.
Do you know what, though? It's funny about being a teenager, because now I see sort of, not cousins, but family friends who have teenagers, and you actually see, and I've babysat lots of teenagers, and you do think, wow, God, yeah, that is a difficult stage in life. And you look back and you think, I was really difficult. But at the time, you don't think you're difficult at all.
No, you don't. No, you don't. But that nothing changes on that, does it? I mean,
no.
I thought I was easygoing and easy as during my teenage years. But I think for my parents, I mean, I really was innocent. You know, I mean, you know, really.
You still are.
Well, yeah, fairly. But I mean, you know, my parents thought I was a nightmare and very, very naughty. So it's all relative, isn't it, really?
It is relative.
Yeah. Okay, well, this week Livy and I have decided to read each other poems that we've composed ourselves about each other. We thought it would be a touching tribute to each other, didn't we?
Oh, yes.
Good.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, okay.
Touching as...
Well, touching as...
Lovely. Go. You go first.
Hang on a minute. I don't like your tone.
No.
There's something going on here.
There's nothing.
I hope you're not mentioning something I don't want you to mention.
No, I'm not at all.
You better not, Libs.
No. Okay. No, you can go. You can do your one first.
This is an ode.
An ode? What's an ode?
It's like an ode to something. It's an ode to something.
To me.
I watch at breath of dawn. Outstretched tendrils. That's already gone wrong. I can't read it. Hang on. I watch at breath of dawn, outstretched tendrils toward the gasping sun. No, I've got it wrong again.
Have you?
Okay.
Is
an
this
ode.
An ode to a tree
I
rather
watch,
than me?
I watch
that was a poem,
at breath of dawn.
And I didn't know it.
Outstretched tendrils towards the peeping sun, unfurling vibrantly into business of life. I am awed, my little broccoli. Oh, her first day at school, from toe to tip, dressed in green and all in wool. I am a broccoli, she declared, triumphant tendrils shielding her little brother, and on she marched, triumphant, toward the sun.
Oh, that's cute. That's really
right.
Nice.
Kind, wasn't it?
What?
Yours isn't going to be. But I do have an alternative.
Oh, do you want to read them both?
Yeah.
Well, do you want me to do mine
yeah,
first?
Yeah, you do yours
and then...
first, then I'll do mine.
Oh, no, I'm really dreading this now.
You better be kind then, aren't you?
Oh.
Come on, Liz.
My darling, fabulous, incredible mum.
Aww.
Isn't it funny that mum rhymes with bum?
Right.
I really hope you've never let anyone slip up a thumb. You're going to kill me for that, but sometimes...
I am.
I never know. Maybe you might think I'm lols and lots of fun. Moving
oh,
on,
dreadful.
You really are the best mum, and we really do laugh. Even once, so much, you managed to somehow swallow a thin scarf.
What?
That brings me back to times you've held my hair when I barf.
What?
To sum it up, sometimes we row and sometimes we cry, but I'd really not be with anyone else no matter how hard we try.
Lord Tennyson, Liz.
Lord Thank
Tennyson,
you.
Nothing less.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well done, Liz.
Yeah.
Good on
Have
the old
Have you ever let anyone slip up a thumb?
Olivia, I'm not... Right, okay. You deserve this one now, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Well done, Liz. It was
Thank
sort
you.
Of clever, but not, you know...
I mean, it missed some
rude,
vital aspects.
Scatological, but anyway. Okay,
well,
here
I thought
we go.
Yours was about a tree.
Well, it was about broccoli, wasn't it? The little girl who was a broccoli. I think it was quite touching, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, Tess. Oh, Tess. Oh, Tess. Claws, claws, claws. Oh, Tess. Nibble, nibble, nibble. Oh, Tess. I'm so sorry. Oh, Tess.
That's mean. Tess. That's mean.
Oh, Tess.
That's really mean.
Written by Felicity Montague.
Thank you, Felicity Montague. Right. Thank you so much for reminding me of nearly killing my own guinea pig.
Well, you suddenly, darling.
Yeah, by accident. Yeah, it scrabbled over my shoulder and I took a step backwards.
I just thought you'd like an ode to Tess.
No, because that was one of the most traumatic experiences of my life. That's a bit bitchy, Liz.
No, it wasn't bitchy, honey.
It was. So basically, I had these sort of rogue guinea pigs that hated me and you and everyone in the family. And Tess, the really lovely, cute one, I took for a little walk into the garden.
She was always trying to escape everybody.
She was trying to escape everyone. And she jumped over my shoulder and I was like, ah! She like flew off like some sort of bat. And then I took a step backwards and I just stood on her face.
I know, it was awful.
It was terrible. Yeah, and then she was just lying there with her jaw like twisted.
Yeah,
and then
your dad,
I thought I'd killed her.
Yeah, but you brought Tess back to life. That was a touching
part.
Oh, Tess is rejoiced at the end of it.
But your face during the whole thing was so I've got you.
I didn't really like the way Tess scrabbled at me when I used to put my hat on.
So you were happy when I stood on her face?
No, at all. No, I was
No,
upset.
It was really sad,
was
actually.
Sad, yeah.
Very sad. Yeah. But she's fine. She's alive and she got adopted by, because we moved.
I really don't think Tess is alive now.
No, I mean, she was for another like 8 years or something.
Yeah, another 8 years.
How long guinea pigs live for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, your poetry is so funny how yours is very abstract.
Yes, it's abstract. Because isn't poetry abstract?
I don't think mine's abstract.
Yours is rhyming
slang. I just think I rhyme words.
Yeah. But that's together. Okay, Liz. Well done.
Well done, you.
Thanks, Liz.
Who won?
I think we're quids in.
Right. Fair enough. Moving onwards. Oh, the only reason we did this was because we found some poems of mine.
Which we might read them next week.
No one wants to hear those.
Well, some of them are quite
funny. Of them's like about a flea and it just goes, if I were a flea, I wish I were a tree. And it just and the third line's like, and I would be free to not be a flea.
Oh my, Charles is a genius.
I am a genius.
Yeah, I know.
Especially when it comes to writing about fleas.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do you want to introduce our fantastic guest?
Frances Barber.
Yes.
Who I've worked with over the years and is a phenomenal actress. She's been on loads and loads of television. I can't even begin to tell you how much television she's been on. She's
been on every stage.
Every stage practically in London. The National Theatre, I remember she played. She was a star in Pygmalion when Howard Davis directed about 25 years ago. She was in a movie I saw recently over the last couple of years called Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. It was absolutely fantastic. I'm very excited, actually, to have Frances.
I can't wait.
And she's very funny, she's very naughty, and she's utterly fascinating. Frances Barber.
Come on, Libs. Hi, Frances. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Frances. My daughter's a bit of a fan. I think she'll fill you in on this.
Oh, I am a fan, I am a real fan. I saw you very early on in my career while I was training at the Donmar Warehouse doing Julius Caesar, which was
fantastic. I loved doing that. Well, we were the pioneers, of course. We were the first company under Phyllida Lloyd that did an all-female Julius Caesar. And we did it specifically to try and get one-upmanship on the Globe, who at the time were everybody at the Globe. All the boys were playing girls. And so we went, right, who can play at that game? And so we set it in, as you know, if you remember it, was set in a women's prison. And we all played all the main parts, all the Julius Caesar, Brutus, Cassius, all of us. And we took it to New York, and it was a great hit. And then after that, everybody copied us, you know. So, but we were the first.
It was brilliant. That's a bit sad to start an interview saying that I'm a fan, isn't it?
No, it's fine, Libby.
Oh, no, I love it. I love it.
Oh, good.
So, Frances, to start off the interview, we have a quote, which my daughter's going to read to you.
We base every episode on a quote, really. Well, we sort of loosely dance around it, don't we? Mm. So this week, which we're going to talk to you about, is the quote that I found, which is, the more a daughter knows the details of her mother's life without flinching or whining, the stronger the daughter.
A quote was Anita Diamond, The Red
Tent. Which neither of us have read.
That was my writing. I couldn't read my own writing. So, Frances, what do you make of that quote? What do you think?
Well, I think that probably for mothers and daughters now, in 2021, that would make some perfect sense. But I have to declare that I don't have any children, I'm childless, and therefore I can only speak from a daughter's perspective. And as I'm now 60, my relationship with my mother was not like that at all. There were many, many secrets. For example, I'm one of six children, and my two brothers and sister above me, there was a 10-year gap, and then another three of us. Wow. And we never, never found out why. And I kept saying to my mum, did Dad go to prison for 10 years? And she'd just say, that's fucking so stupid. And, but we never, ever found out. And we kind of stopped asking because it was quite clear that we were never going to get an answer out of either of them.
But that's fascinating, isn't it?
It is, fascinating.
Tell you.
It was a very, very different way to have a relationship with a mother of that generation. Mm. You know, she didn't really talk to me about periods. I had to find out all these things on my own.
I mean, what happened to me was my girlfriend's taught, I had blood and I panicked. And I told my girlfriends, who then, you know, frog marched me to the loo, her in hysterics, talking me through a borrowed Tampax, what to do. I had no idea. I thought my whole body was falling apart. What about you?
Hopefully not used. Well, it's just borrowed.
Not used.
That's what I was questioning that. Yeah. Borrowed as in from the box, not from elsewhere. Yeah.
From the box, Frances.
Well, I remember that I'm old enough to remember Dr. White's sanitary towels, which were so... I mean, actually, now you could use them as a mouth covering mask, couldn't you, in the pandemic? I mean, they were so gigantic.
Oh, they were.
I think you gave me one of those on my first period, definitely.
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, I did. But I mean, you know, well,
I didn't tend to wear trousers then, and we weren't. I was in a very strict school, a grammar school, where we had to wear uniforms and hats and everything. So it was, I mean, those ghastly things, they were so gigantic. But it was a strange time, you know, that we didn't have sex education at school. I think we possibly had a talk from a groovy teacher once, and everybody started giggling and then frightened. So it was a completely different kind of relationship where it was all those things that we now take for granted and we know are perfectly normal. my mother's generation, it wasn't like that at all. She was very embarrassed about all those things, and she just simply couldn't find the vocabulary to discuss them.
Yeah. No.
But did you ever have a conversation with her that sort of shocked you in terms of, oh gosh, I didn't think she'd open up about that, or I didn't think I'd hear about that, or was there ever a moment that clicked?
Yes, I remember coming back from university my first year, and I was heartbroken because I'd fallen in love with somebody and he left me. And she did, I burst into tears and told her, and she said, oh, your first broken heart. But that's the closest she ever came to saying anything that was remotely emotional. She just didn't, she couldn't do it. She couldn't do it. Nobody had done it to her. Nobody taught her. And it was kind of frowned upon in a way that you had to have a properly stiff upper, British upper stiff lip, whatever the hell you call it.
Stiff upper lip.
And stiff upper lip. And just got on with it and found out things yourself. So I was completely shocked when she actually talked about a broken heart. And I said, no, 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 it isn't that. Because she took me by surprise.
Did you ever find out anything that she never knew you knew about? Details-wise, like, you know, about her life? Or was it all just so sort of under, you know?
No, I never found anything out. She was, without a shadow of a doubt, the most beautiful, gorgeous, wonderful, kind human being that I've ever met, before or since, and I don't think I'll ever meet anybody else who was. Mm. And because there were six of us, I know my father did have favourites, and that's really, really antagonistic in a family. But my mother never, never, never did. If she did, she never let us see it. She adored us all completely the same. She treated us all the same. And she was kind and considerate, and we all worshipped her. When she died, we were devastated, devastated.
So what did she teach you, Frances? I mean, there's obviously a lot from what you've said so far.
Well, in many ways, I rejected what she taught me because she was a very old-fashioned housewife. I mean, she ended up, after having six children, she was a dinner lady at the local primary school, and she'd been a cook before that in the school, and she'd won the best pastry chef in the West Midlands. And
she did. Brilliant.
And she had a plaque on the wall that was the most prized possession of her life. But what she did teach me was, don't do what she did, which is basically have six children and never do anything and never go anywhere. She was the one that pushed me out into the world and said, you know, you must live it, you must experience everything you possibly can, don't saddle yourself down as I've done. And for that amount of generosity in a woman of her age is quite something, isn't it? Because I know that some mothers, of contemporaries of mine, didn't want them to leave home. She was pushing me out the door.
Yeah, she's a brave
and
woman.
And all her kids, yeah. She was wonderful. All of us, she said, go and find your world. Go and do your things. Have ambition. Have some motivation to leave. Because I was born in a council estate in Wolverhampton, and it was quite tough. And she wanted us all to do better. And so did my father, actually, in fairness to him. But it was really her that pushed us very, very much. And that is a very beautiful thing to do to your daughter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Did you feel close to your mother then? As a result of not being able to discuss certain things with you, still felt very close to her?
Yes, that was the weirdest thing. And she was very simple in that. She loved her kids. She loved her home life. She wanted more, without a shadow of a doubt, but she just kind of accepted what she had. Yeah. And I remember once we'd all been on holiday to Lyme Regis, and she gave me these two egg cups in a little sort of presentation box with two little pots of marmalade. And she said to me, what could be nicer than that? And that still makes me want to burst into tears now.
Frances.
Because I just think she got such pleasure out of giving it to me. And then years later, in my 30s, I did a lot of films in France always playing an English woman, but in French. So I took her. Wow. By then we knew she was poorly, so I took her to Paris with me. And all the crew and the writers and the director made a huge fuss of her. We took her to the Eiffel Tower. We took her to a fabulous restaurant on the Champs-Élysées where she met her idol, the tennis player, Jimmy Connors. And I asked, when she went to the loo, would he sign an autograph for her? And he signed the menu and she was in tears. I took her to Yves Saint Laurent and I bought her a red suit and a fabulous Chanel handbag and shoes. And she kept saying, why aren't there any price tags on this? Because she'd have fainted. Because it was more than a house in Wolverhampton, the price of the suit. So I had my opportunity to thank her.
Yeah. Frances, do you think she ever felt, when she got towards the end of her life, I hope you don't mind me asking this, do you think she felt slight regrets that perhaps when she saw her children, she was obviously so proud of you and the rest of your family, siblings, but do you think she ever saw your lives and began to think, gosh, I wish I'd had my life again, my chance again? Or do you think she just accepted her lot?
I think it's a combination of the two. I am sure she wished she'd have had her life again. I am absolutely sure of that, but she never said it. She never said it because she felt as if she'd done her bit by having her children do it. And it was a different era. I mean, it's so shocking now for those young people like you, Olivia, to look back and you wouldn't recognize it at all, because everything changed very rapidly after that, it seems to me. It wasn't a sort of long-term thing, because feminism came in the 70s and everything tumbled on from that.
Yeah,
and she simply had no concept of the kind of world that we're living now. So even if she did have regrets, she kept them to herself.
Yeah, it's rather brave, isn't it, in stalwart. It's rather impressive, Frances.
So it sort of makes sense that the quote doesn't really... It's a bit of shit, really, the quote, because it doesn't matter about the details. It doesn't matter really about the details of knowing about your mother's life. It's not going to change how strong you are. You know, you still learn from her and who she is and what she teaches you, principles-wise and morals.
Yes,
you still are strong and you're still resourceful. And, you know, Frances is saying, right, I didn't know many details about my mum. However, Frances, you're incredibly strong and that's, you know, it doesn't go down to that.
No, I don't think I would have liked to have known deepest, darkest secrets, in a way. I think some things should be private.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
I know that it's very now, isn't it, to share your sex life with your daughter and vice versa and all of those things. Well, the last thing on the face of this earth my mother would have done is share any of that. Huge secrets.
Yeah, I think you're right, Frances, there were a lot of them. And
well, it's a bit, you know, Mike Leigh's film Secrets and Lies. It's kind of based on that. Mm. That even, you know, I mean, I no idea, as I say, about that 10-year gap. Did my mum have another child and did it not survive? I mean, I simply don't know. And none of us do. None of my brothers and sisters know either.
And you never will now, of course.
And now we never will. No, we never will.
And your dad wouldn't, would he never talk to you about that stuff? He just completely...
Oh, no, he'd be worse, much worse.
Oh, God, okay.
Oh, no.
Fair enough.
Oh, no.
Well, maybe it's better not to know stuff.
I remember when I got my first job, it was with Hull Truck. And so he drove me up to Hull. And it was the longest time I think I'd spent in a car with him alone in my life, because there were always so many other kids in the car. And I remember I had a brand new pair of white dungarees on and some red kickers, because I thought that's what actors wear. And then I had this, we're going back to the terrible thing, I had this terrible period. And I just completely, it was like I'd hemorrhaged on my white dungarees. He didn't say a word.
Nothing.
Not a solitary word.
No.
And then I said, I need to stop at the service station and go to the toilet. And he didn't speak and he stopped at the service station. I went to the toilet. I tried to wash them. I was crying. And I came back and just sat there with wet dungarees for the rest of the journey. And it was a long way to Hull.
Oh, my God.
It was never mentioned. Ever.
just feeling mortified.
He couldn't
as well.
Cope. He couldn't cope with it. He could not cope with
it. I suppose he was frightened of it, Francis.
Of course he was.
Yeah.
Petrified. He didn't know what to say to me. And both of us were just so embarrassed. It was a horrible journey.
So talking about the weather. Oh, that's a nice motorway.
I don't think we spoke. I don't think we spoke. I think we were both in such shock we actually were struck dumb.
No, so and nowadays, Francis, if that happened to a mother, a daughter-father relationship, people would sort of talk about maybe, you know, it's an abusive sort of thing not to support your daughter, but it wasn't. It was just people couldn't cope. I mean, he couldn't cope with it.
He couldn't cope. He didn't know what to do or say. And I think all he did say is, I wish your mother was here. She should have come.
And I bet you he made that abundantly clear when he got home. I am never doing that again.
I doubt if he even told her, you know, because wouldn't be able to, because he would have been embarrassed that he didn't do anything.
Oh,
and because she would have probably said, well, how did you help her? Well, I didn't do anything.
And there's no anger there, Francis, at all. You know, that was the situation. No anger. It's just...
No. I also, you know, it helps when you've got so many brothers and sisters because... You actually eke out all the feelings of possible frustration that you may have felt, and that what we used to do was just have humour about it.
Yeah,
and so when I did tell my brothers and sisters about what had happened, we just all laughed. And I remember my brother saying, oh my God, I can see his face now because he knew. Not possible for him to deal with this. And so it was easier to... There wasn't any anger because we just would go, well, that's who they are. That's what they're like. You know, they're never going to change. There's no point trying to say to yourself, you know, when the woman is tied on the railway track and you see the train coming, you can watch that clip of the movie 100 times, but the train is still going to hit her so that you can't get her off the tracks. So there's no point saying, I wished he could have behaved in a different way because he didn't have it in his DNA.
But I also think now that divorce is more of a thing, you do talk more openly with your, you know, like, I don't think I would have the same relationship with you that I do now.
No.
If you were still...
Well, sometimes I don't want the information, Francis. I just don't
Neither
want
Neither do
it.
I, thank you.
Really
I don't want
I
the
really
information
don't.
Sometimes.
I really, bloody hell, do I want to hear, Mum, you know, I've got something to tell. No, I don't want to hear it.
Well, what do you think I feel? You're my mother, I have to sit there.
I give you that information.
I would have bring up one story, but this is Francis's
no,
time.
No, you're not going to bring up any story.
No, I think
Francis.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I don't care about anybody else but Francis. I want Francis to like me and respect me and think I'm a reasonable person. I don't want to know what I'm really like.
I'm still reeling in shock about the used tampon.
So let's give you one more story of my mother. Is that I made an idiotic mistake. Like, my whole life has been one idiotic mistake. And I turned to her when I got back from university and she said, I don't know, the girls nowadays. I think I was about 22 at the time. And she said, the girls nowadays are so promiscuous, I just don't understand it. And I said, well, I agree, Mum. You know, I know girls have been sleeping with boys since they were 15. I've only slept with two. And she walked out of the room. She was speechless with rage. And I think I said one. I think I slept with one. And she was so appalled. And she went to my father and just like, I had in her hands, just like, oh my God, this is our daughter. And it was like, I knew I made a massive mistake too late. But can you imagine, Francis, the one person you're supposed to be able to talk to, and you can't because she was too embarrassed, too horrified, too frightened.
Yeah,
you came in the other day and you went, you're sex mad, you are. And I hadn't even said anything. I was talking about a show.
What were you saying, Francis?
Sorry, Francis. So after that trip to Paris, Francis, and the suit and everything.
With your mother.
With your mother, yes. Mm. Yes.
And the beautiful suit.
Do you want to ask the question?
No, I'm just backing
you up.
Why
don't you go for it?
Oh, God, get
it's
on
like
with
it. Anyway, did you find, like, you know, did you spend more time with her? Did your career take off? Was she supportive of all of that? You know, you were obviously in a lovely moment of your life. Did you spend more time with her? Were there just little pockets that you spent together?
I spoke to her all the time, but of course, you know, by then I was living permanently in London, but one of my sisters and one of my brothers still lives in and around Wolverhampton, so they saw her all the time, and her grandchildren, and then before the actual Paris event, something terrible had happened because my brother was killed in a car accident.
Oh, and oh,
but luckily she, I know this sounds odd to say it, but she was already dead. So we lost her and my brother in the space of about 9 months.
My goodness me.
And in a way, all of us agreed that we were so relieved that she'd already gone, because she would have never recovered from that.
No,
never.
She wouldn't have done.
Apparently there is just nothing like losing a child.
Nothing.
No, nothing. But before the Paris trip, whilst my brother was still alive, he owned a steelworks in Wolverhampton. So he actually said to my mum, our Frankie, which is what they called me, is she's at the RSC, isn't she? And he said, I've got this client over from Denmark and he's desperate to see Hamlet. And my mum said, well, she's in that. And he said, oh, well, do you think she'd get us some... Anyway, I got them some tickets. So they sat in the house seats... And they were given champagne. I made sure they got the whole, you know, the whole treatment of it. Mm. And the client apparently said to my brother, well, which one's your sister? And he said, the mad one. I was playing Ophelia. And my mum said, oh, I nearly burst with pride.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It's so lovely. And Virginia McKenna was Gertrude, and Brian Blessed was Claudius, and Ken Branner, and blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
And they all came out to have supper with her and my brother. And I'm like, I can't tell you how proud she was. I can't tell you. I can see her face now. I've got photographs of it. She was bursting.
Francis, I can't thank you enough for this interview. It's just so, as usual, fascinating, funny, everything that... we could have dreamt for, really.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's lovely to talk to you and seeing such a gorgeous mum and daughter and your great relationship.
Oh, God. I don't know.
Francis, let's all have a drink down the line when this is all over.
Yes. When it's all over, yes.
Thank you, Francis. You're a star. Pleasure. You really are.
Pleasure.
Do you think I did come across as a really sad fan?
No, you came across as a fan, darling, but that's okay because she's done a lot of work and she is amazing.
We should actually say, we did talk about this before, didn't we? She's got a film coming out, or has just come out on Amazon and Sky that you can rent, that's called Trick or Treat.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to see any of Frances's recent work, go and watch the film. Well, we should do that tonight.
Yeah, let's do it tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Well, that's that then.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Why are you so shocked?
Well, I didn't think we were necessary to say goodbye. But anyway, I mean, it's
not
an audio.
You're just not saying anything.
Well, bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye. The Mother-Daughter Manual was painfully hosted and created by Felicity Montague and Olivia Nixon, produced by Luke Nixon, original music by George Montague, and this was a Snipper Nixon production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.